Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to this episode of the Applause Radio Show.
Welcome,
tonight we
welcome.
Tonight we have author and biographer J. Randy Tavabarelli. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Randy.
That was pretty great. It was perfect,
excellent.
Actually.
Excellent.
Okay, good.
Well, welcome everybody, Applause Radio Show. Randy, what'd you think of that intro? I don't know how to live up to that.
I mean, I feel like I should.
We gave you the red carpet there. I'm sorry.
Really?
It gives me chills. It's Elvis's intro, and I just love it. But anyway, folks, welcome to Applause Radio Show with John Riccio and myself. Tonight we have J. Randy Tavabarelli, and he goes by Randy. And that is a question I do have for you, Randy. What made you choose J. Randy instead of John Randy Tavabarelli?
You know, when I was a kid, when I was about 10 years old, there was a reporter who worked for a black newspaper that I loved called Soul Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And his name was G. Fitz Bartley. It was initial G. Fitz Bartley. So when I was 10, I was working for the Supremes, running their fan club for them.
I know. I can't wait to get there. Let's go.
Yeah. I didn't want the membership to think that they were sending their $1.50 to a 10-year-old, right?
Right.
And
right.
So I thought the one way for me to sound older would be to add the J to my name, the way that G. Fitz Bartley added G to his. And that's how I became J. Randy Tavabarelli.
Well, it sounds very classy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, you know, when I was 10, it made me sound older. Now that I'm a certain age, I'm thinking maybe I should drop it. Maybe I'll sound younger.
Well, folks, Randy has written books. I'm sure you've read them. I mean, they're all top sellers. He's written most unauthorized biographies about your favorite celebrities or pop culture folks out there. He has written, let's see, I got to read these, Randy, because I don't remember them all. The Secret, there's so many. The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe, the Michael Jackson, The Magic, The Madness, The Whole Story, Jackie Ethel Jones, Women of Camelot, Jackie, Janet, and Lee, The Secret Lives of Jackie, oh, I can't pronounce that. You're going to have to do that for me. Auchincloss, and her daughters, Jackie Kennedy Onassis and Lee Radiswell, Elizabeth Taylor, I almost said Elizabeth Montgomery because I got bewitched on my mind. After Camelot, Once Upon a Time, Behind the Fairy Tale, Princess of Grace and Prince Rainier, The Hiltons, The Families, oh my God, we could go on and on. But we have some questions. So if Randy is from actually Philadelphia, and you mentioned that you started working for Mary Wilson of the Supremes. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, when I was 10 years old, I saw the Supremes in concert in Atlantic City. After the show was over, I asked them if I could be their fan club president, and they looked at me and said, sure, why not? Because I'm sure they figured...
We got this white boy wanting to be the president of our friend of the club. Yeah.
And he's 10, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, but they didn't realize that I was, you know, serious. I went to work and, you know, went full bore into this thing with the Supremes, and I did that for 10 years until I was 20 years old. So I worked all the way through, you know, school, high school, you know, and after I got out of high school, Mary Wilson from the Supreme sent for me to come to Los Angeles to work for them here in L.A. And then that's how I got started in this business. I got started in the business working for the Supremes.
Cool. And like, other than the fan club, what did you do for Mary? Or was it strictly working fan club?
It was strictly fan club, and it was sort of the beginnings of public relations. I mean, I was I was 19 years old when I moved to Los Angeles, and I was starting to get into PR. So, you know, Mary was helping me get my feet wet in public relations.
Oh,
and
nice.
And it was really great, you know, and then the Supremes broke up, and then I was, you know, there I was in Los Angeles with, you know, pretty much with no college education because I didn't go to college.
Well, I was going to ask you, what is your degree in? Is it journalism, PR? I mean,
my degree is in, you know, Italian-American survival, you know.
Yeah,
I didn't go to college, and really, you see that? And I didn't take any writing courses ever.
Me neither.
See, so you know,
some people can tell though with me.
Well, they could definitely tell with me as well. When I first started out, I was not, you know, I mean, I was not the best writer, but I had a lot of ambition and persistence.
That's all you need.
Tenacity, you know,
creativity,
everything that, and it took me about 15 years of knocking around Los Angeles before I finally started to become successful, you know, and but you know, it was, the 15 years were tough, but very much worth it.
Oh, absolutely! Look at what happened. See, originally you're from Philadelphia. Philadelphia is known, well, back in the day, as like the city of soul. And I can understand you getting involved with the Supremes, but how did you become the publisher for Soul Magazine? Here I am picturing this white young guy walking in there saying, I'm going to be your publisher. Not right
now.
You know what I mean?
I'm surprised you know about that, because
that was your first job, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, and that's so interesting because it's something people don't really know about, but
we do our work here.
I guess so, man. Well, you know, I earlier mentioned G. Fitzbartley, and G. Fitzbartley worked for the magazine called Soul. And when I was a little kid, I used to go to the newsstand and buy this magazine. They used to send one to my newsstand, and because I was living in a white neighborhood, and there was nobody interested in this black newspaper, except for me, you know. They would send one to the newsstand. I would buy that one. And I loved it all throughout my entire youth. And so when the Supremes were finished for me, the first thing I did was go over to Soul Magazine and say, you know, I want to be a writer here.
Yeah.
And they said, well, can you write? And I said, well, I've written a lot of letters to the editor here.
Oh,
and they said, well, that's writing a letter to the editor is not quite the same.
Oh, it's him.
But they gave me a chance. You know, they gave me a shot. And one of my first interviews with them was with the Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, cool.
And then I went from that point on, you know, to the Jackson 5 and to you know, Stevie Wonder and the Temptations. And and then when the editor quit, they hired me to be the editor of the magazine. And then when the magazine was going out of business, I took over as the publisher. So it was an amazing story for me in the sense that this was a magazine I loved when I was 10 years old. And then when I was in my 20s, I was the publisher. And that was a pretty incredible experience.
Cool. That's great. That was your start. That got you going, you know. It's like,
it did.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah. Real quick, anybody wants to talk to Randy, please give us a call at 646-478-0999. And, John, anything to say on your side, guy?
Well, I just want to tell Randy, if people don't call in tonight, it's because they're not listening, but people seem to be listening in their cars the next day or tonight they'll listen to it, and
they'll go back to it after on demand.
They don't follow a lot. You know, they don't follow a live show anymore. They just you know, listen to it when they can.
It's true. Yeah.
At their leisure. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I do a lot, you know, as you can imagine, I do a lot of, you know, radio shows. And what I found is that people, you know, listen to them later on the internet, you know.
Right.
And it's a whole new way of, you know, of getting information, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I wanted to ask you also, now, you've written mostly biography. Have you ever written a fiction novel or?
No, I haven't. I mean, it's for two reasons. First of all, that's a separate kind of talent.
Oh,
and I'm not 100% sure that I could do it, but I'm not 100% sure that I couldn't. But
yeah.
The problem is that I've always been under contract. You know, for the last 25 years, I've always had a book contract, and I've never had like a moment off to be able to do
take
something other. Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, I always say that one day, you know, I would love to, you know, not sign up another book immediately and take a couple of years and maybe do some fiction.
Oh. And what do you think was the best book that you put out, like that what people enjoyed most? I know which one it is, but yeah.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I have to say that, you know, Call Her Miss Ross, my Diana Ross biography, the first of three that I wrote. Everywhere
three.
I go,
I didn't know there was three. I thought.
Yeah, I've written three, and everywhere I go, no matter what country I go to, everywhere I go, people are like, "Oh, Call Her Miss Ross, Call Her Miss Ross." People love that. And then the other, the second
the
most.
Boss.
She's the boss. And then, of course, the Michael Jackson book.
Right. I figured that. Yeah.
And that is something that is very close to my heart because Michael Jackson and I were friends.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, it's an important book to me. And I'm in the process right now of doing another book about Michael. And this one is more about my relationship with him over the course of the many, many years that we knew each other from the ages of about 12 until he died at 50.
Right, wow.
And,
so you knew him basically by going to see him and then meeting him through the Supremes, obviously, right? Or
well, what happened was when I was about 12 years old, the Jackson 5 were making their first appearance as a Motown recording artist in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And at that time, you know, as I said, I was working for the Supremes, and Diana Ross called me up and told me, you know, that she had just discovered this group called the Jackson 5 when she was in Gary, Indiana, right? And I knew inside and out, you know, and I said,
Jackson 5, sorry, I had the feel, go ahead, finish before I I can't help it. It comes out. I can't control it.
I know. That's good. It happens to most people, you know. But
so,
Diana, she asked me if I would go to see the show in Philadelphia. And so my parents took me to see the Jackson 5 in their first appearance as a Motown recording artist. And then after the show was over, we went backstage. And then that's when I met Michael and struck up a friendship with him. And our friendship was basically based on the fact that I knew Diana Ross and he loved Diana Ross. So,
right,
you know,
exactly.
So the entire maybe first 4 or 5 years of our friendship was all about, isn't she great?
Diana.
Isn't she great?
Right. That's funny.
Yeah.
I can picture you. I was like, isn't she great? Like, isn't she great?
Yeah, Michael, yeah, she, like, Diana wrote what happened TV special, and she would, and then, you know, 10 minutes later, my phone would ring, would be Michael Jackson. Wasn't she great? Yeah. Oh, man.
Am I wrong that the first book, Diana, was pretty much love, but then the second one, was it, or am I backwards? One of them, a lot of people said you might have said some things that people didn't like. I mean, I don't know which one because I didn't read
well,
I apologize.
Yeah, the first book was commissioned by Jackie Onassis at Doubleday, and so she sort of gave me my break as a writer, and it was a more of a photo book about Diana. You know, it had text, but it was mostly a coffee table photo book. And my agent at that time said, you know, every writer has at least one really good book in him, and yours is Diana Ross. I mean, and I said, well, haven't I already done that? And he said, not really. You need to do, you know, a full sort of, you know, unbiased, not a love letter like the first book was,
right,
but a real biography.
Right.
of Diana Ross. And so that's what I did. So, yeah, you know, when you do a real biography of a person, there are going to be parts in there that people
they
are going
don't
to
like.
It's just the way it is, you know. I mean, you know, you just have to just, you know, do your best to be as balanced and fair and compassionate and empathetic as you can. And I think that people often don't understand that a biography is as much a reflection of the writer as it is of the subject, you know.
Right.
And when you read any of my books, especially in the last 20 years as I've grown as a writer, when you read any of my books, you get to know me as much as you get to know the subject.
Yeah.
Because you get to know what kind of a person I am just based on the way that I express myself and the way that I present the subject.
Right, the way you write.
I know that I've read books, you know, about celebrities sometimes, and I'm left with not, you know, what a horrible person that celebrity is. I'm left with, wow, what a terrible person that writer must be if these are the only stories that he could figure out to tell about that celebrity, you know.
Right.
So I mean, I was raised, you know, in an Italian-American family, very close-knit. My mom and dad raised me well, and so I know that in order to make them proud, they're both gone now, but to make them proud, my goal, my mandate is always to be, you know, my best possible self as a writer and an interpreter of another person's life, because it's a huge responsibility.
Right.
It's a big responsibility to take on, you know, somebody's life and historically documented. And, you know, you've got to be fair. And my goal with my books, I always say that my goal with my books is that I want my readers to love my subjects by the time they finish the book.
Right.
You know, and especially in the last 25 years or so, I think that I've really achieved that.
I think so too. I mean, they're.
Hey, Joanne, we got a call.
Yeah.
We have a caller. Patty's on the line. Let's see, Patty, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Patty?
Hi, Patty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. I was wondering if you'd be able to tell me something nice or not so nice. I love my Turner Classic Movies, and I am just in awe of Grace Kelly. And when I watch her movies, I just would love to know something about her that we might not know or, you know, not have read in the book.
Sure. Well, Patty, you know, I wrote a book about Grace and Renier. It's called Once Upon a Time. I went to Monaco.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed everybody over there. It was a fantastic experience for me. And I love telling the Grace Kelly story, because what people don't know is that when she married Renier, she really didn't know him very well at all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they had only met once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
And she got sort of swept away by this sort of notion of a fairy tale of marrying a prince. Mm-hmm. And couldn't resist it. I mean, she was swept away by it. But when she got there, when she got to Monaco after she was his wife, she realized that she really didn't know him at all, and that she didn't know the language, and she didn't know the people, and she missed her friends, and she missed her family, and she really thought that she had messed up her life. And so what my book is about.
Well, to be honest, her career was just going.
Yeah, she was
at
sure.
That time,
and she gave up.
Go.
Yeah, and she gave up her career and everything.
Right.
And
so what my book is about, Patty. I would love for you to read it.
I did read it.
Oh, you did read it. Oh, cool. Then you know what it's about.
I didn't realize that you were the one who did that book.
Yes,
so
that's me.
My ignorance on that. I did read. That's why I love Grace Kelly.
That's why she wants to know, tell her something not so good and something really, really nice that wasn't in the book.
Well, you know, what I love about that book is that the book is really about what do you do when you feel like you've really ruined your life, and how do you then proceed to have your best possible life, you know, from the ashes.
How to be
of,
happy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what she did. I mean, she really committed herself.
Right.
To her marriage and to being
she
a princess.
She just got an
to,
Oscar for The Country Girl.
Yes, yes.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, she was an Academy Award winning actress. And so, you know, to give
Wait,
all that
you
up.
You said she just got it now?
No.
No.
Oh, you
just
got it then.
Oscar?
Yes. Oh, duh, sorry. Go ahead, Randy. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I mean, she gave up a lot. you know, and then when she realized that, she felt like she had made a mistake. And so rather than let it destroy her, she went about the business of trying to figure out how to make her life work with these new parameters.
Mm.
And then, you know, she became one of maybe the, besides Princess Diana, the most beloved and best known princess of all time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just an incredible story of courage and bravery to be able to fix your life when you really think that you've made some big mistakes. Because I as I wrote in the book, that's really everybody's story. You know, we all have had these moments when we're like, oh my God, what have I done? You know, what have I done? And, you know, and you know, like I just like, you know, I quit my great job, or I ended a relationship that I really shouldn't have ended, or I'm in a relationship I shouldn't be in. You know, we all have these moments when we're like, what have I done, right?
What are you laughing for, Joanne?
What?
What are you laughing for?
She knows what I'm talking about.
Well, I didn't read the book, unfortunately. I apologize. But you know when, unfortunately, when she passed, when Stephanie, or I don't remember who was driving. I do remember the story. I think Grace was driving. And they both, unfortunately, had the accident. Grace, that's when she passed. What do you think really happened? Because I know you probably know 99% of the truth, but, I mean, the rumors were swelling that, you know, Stephanie was drunk, she did, or they were fighting in the car. I mean, what actually do you think, based on your interviews and everything, what happened that day, that tragic day?
I mean, I just think it was a tragic accident, and Grace just, possibly had a stroke while she was driving.
The thing that
strikes me is that whenever there is a celebrity death, you know, like Elvis, Marilyn Monroe, even JFK's assassination, it's really hard for us to imagine that somebody so celebrated, somebody like Marilyn or Kennedy, you know, or Michael, would have an ordinary death, you know.
Right.
And so a lot of people want to sort of ascribe all kinds of drama because they just can't believe it would be just a car crash. Somebody like Grace Kelly deserves a better ending than that, you know.
Right.
And so they try to come up with a lot of stories, you know, to sort of justify the loss.
Right.
And sometimes, unfortunately, it's just a simple case of, you know, it is what it is. And
Well, it was wonderful to speak with you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you for calling, Patty. I love the fact that you read that book because it's one of my favorites.
I didn't catch the beginning of the conversation. Do you have a new one coming out?
Oh, we're getting there. Go ahead.
We're getting there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll continue listening. So, okay.
Thanks,
Patty.
Unless you want to tell the folks now what you're working on, Randy.
Well, actually, I have a new book that just came out in June. It's called The Kennedy Heirs.
Right.
And it's about the third generation of Kennedy. So that's John Kennedy.
Third generation. Okay.
Yeah. It's Carolyn Bessette. Carolyn Kennedy, John Kennedy Jr.
Yeah,
it's really great. I mean, it's such a great book. I'm so happy with it, and I wish everybody would just, you know, pick up The Kennedy Heirs, because you'll love them, and you'll be inspired by them to want to, you know, possibly be of service, if not politically, you know, at least to your fellow man, at least to find a way to come out of yourself and give, because that's what the Kennedys have always done, and that's what the book is about. The book is about being of service, and so it's called The Kennedy Heirs, and it's out right now.
Cool. Excellent. And you're not working on anything now other than promoting this, or?
No, I'm halfway finished with another book, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm doing the Bush Dynasty, you know, which is,
oh,
you know.
Oh, really? That's
yeah.
Interesting.
It's really great. I mean, it's, you know, it's George and Bush and Laura Bush and Barbara Bush, and, you know, it's just a, it's a, it's a fantastic family, and they've given so much. And
all I know, yeah.
And you know, whether the two Bushes were your favorite presidents or not is sort of irrelevant to me because I'm not a political writer.
Mm.
You know, my books are about family. They're not about politics. And
right.
And I think that, you know, when you read the Kennedys, you really, it doesn't make any difference what your politics is. You become absorbed in the stories that I tell because you can relate to the family. And that's the same with the Bushes. I think that their experiences are so relatable, and I think that people are going to really love reading about them.
Well, I enjoyed the After Camelot. That I saw the adaptation on Reels. And
oh.
That was really good. I enjoyed that.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was so, you know, it was a fantastic experience. And, you know, I was an executive producer on that. And,
right, cool.
You know, and we took my book After Camelot and turned it into a miniseries that still to this day is kind of one of my best experiences in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
Because
well,
the people.
I enjoyed it. You could tell because it was really done well.
Katie Holmes as Jackie,
yep,
was
yep,
incredible. Matthew Perry as Ted.
Yep.
It was such a good time, and
yeah,
written by Stephen Cronish and directed by John Cassar. I mean, all the heavyweights, you know, contributed to this thing, and it made me so proud to just, you know, be able to breathe the same air as those people. It was amazing.
Right. Now I got to talk to you about my favorite. One of my favorites. I've got so many favorites. Carol Burnett. I love her. I love her.
Wow, that's going way back, because that was 1980, maybe 1985 or 86.
Well,
know.
I'm old, so you know.
Yeah, me too. Apparently.
Did you actually meet her for that one?
I sure did. It was so great because you know, Carol gave me access to everybody in her life, and
she
so,
knows everybody.
Yeah, I mean, so I had a chance. Not only, you know,
her
did I get a chance,
and, right,
her family, her husband, you know, Tim Conway, Harvey Korman,
mm-hmm,
Lyle Wagner, Vicki Lawrence, mm-hmm, Elizabeth Taylor, Julie Andrews. I mean,
wow.
Lucille Ball wrote the liner notes for the book, in the back.
Well, do you know Michael Stern?
Yeah, sure do.
We had him on. He wrote. What was Tom? What was the book he wrote for Lucy? Oh God, I love Lucy.
I had a ball or something like that. I had a ball.
Oh, I had a ball. That's right. Yeah.
He is great. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's funny, you know, because with every subject that I write, you know, you come across like the, you know, professional.
Right.
I don't want to say fans because there's so much more than that. They're like,
yeah,
they're like the, you know, the real pros to be able,
right,
to explain a person's life.
Right.
And every book that I've ever written, you know, I come across these people who are to that subject what I am to Diana Ross. You know, like when I was a kid and Diana Ross was my entire life and the Supremes were my entire life.
Right. Right.
You know, Michael Stern was obsessed with Lucille Ball.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, and you know, so and you know, somebody else was obsessed with Julie Andrews and somebody else was obsessed with Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, it's so wonderful, you know, that then you become adults and you're able to, you know, continue to to express your interest in that subject the way that Michael has with Lucy. I think he's great. I think he's great.
Yeah, he was a great guy, actually, to have on, and we're friends still. I haven't talked to him in a while since he did the Brady thing. But what I did want to ask you, how do you choose the subjects you're going to write about? Are you basically doing it because you're a fan, or other than Diana and Michael? And, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of finished the my idols when I did Diana and Michael, you know.
Yeah.
And that was 30 years ago, you know. So, you know, since that time, you know, I've had to make a decision that I will only write about people that I truly admire,
right?
And whose lives are inspiring and who are good people. And, you know, and that's very subjective because it's kind of like who I decide is a good person might not be somebody else is a good person. But I have to believe that that person is a genuine good person in order for me to spend years of my life devoted to telling that person's story. And
yeah,
also,
how long does it take you to write one of your biographies?
It takes as long as 3 years. Sometimes it takes two. With the Bushes, I spent 2 years on the Bushes, and then I stopped it and wrote Beyonce.
Yeah,
and then I wrote Jackie, Janet, and Lee, and then I went back to the Bushes. So sometimes they're not consistent projects. Sometimes you work on them for a couple of years, you move on to something else, and then you go back to them. And so it's hard to say how long they take because the time frame is just varies with each project.
Mm. Wow. So your personal opinion, or maybe not, did the Kennedys kill Marilyn?
Absolutely not. I mean, that's another example, of Marilyn, being such a beautiful star and such an icon that people cannot believe that she just had an overdose, that she just had one really, really bad night. And they would love to be able to ascribe, something bigger to that story. And so the Kennedys, are obviously that would be very intriguing. And there are people, there are people who swear by it. But Marilyn had a number of overdoses before she died.
Right, I know.
This was a woman who clearly had, problems.
Other than supposedly, let's say, in quotations, knowing her, why would they be at her place that night?
You'd have to prove that they were, some people have said that Bobby was there that day. I don't know. I try to stay away from that stuff in my book. I don't even try to unpack conspiracy theories because I just don't generally believe any conspiracy theory just on its face, And people have all asked me a lot of questions about JFK's assassination and, how many assassins were there and did Lee Harvey Oswald work alone? And I stay away from that, too.
I think there was only one.
I do too, but luckily I've never had to write about it, because I've only written about the Kennedys, through the lens of the women.
Right.
And then after Camelot, JFK was already dead by the time that book began, so that took me off the hook there as well, So I've never had to address it, but I feel like there might be a JFK book in me one day down the line, a full on President Kennedy biography.
Right.
And when that happens, I think then I'll be able to look into that more deeply.
Mm. What kind of setting do you use when you write? I mean, you're in the office.
You're
sitting at the beach or by the pool?
No, boy, I'm at Starbucks, man. I mean, I am. I wrote probably, I don't know, maybe 17, 18 books in my office by myself.
Right.
And then about 6 years ago, I was like, I need to get out of the house. And I went to Starbucks and I started working at Starbucks, and something about the activity behind me and the noise and it actually does not distract me. It actually acts like white noise and it kind of motivates me. And man, I have written the last four books of mine at Starbucks, I think that they should give me some kind of free.
I was going to say, you need to hook up with them. Use your PR stuff. Deal going there.
I mean, do you know how many cups of coffee I've had in the last 6 years? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I should get like a lifetime sort of supply or something. I mean,
exactly.
I know.
How was it working with Madonna?
That was a fantastic experience. I started the book at one point in the 1990s, and I just didn't feel that she was ready yet. I had done a lot of interviews with her, and, she was in the middle of her sort of self-involved phase, with the sex book.
Yeah,
she had
the kids around that time.
She wasn't ready yet, to have the full appraisal of her life. And so I waited until – I stopped. I put the book away, as I often do, and then I waited until she married Guy Ritchie, and then she had Rocco, and she discovered Kabbalah, and she became a different person. And then at that point, she was somebody I thought my readers would really, you know, appreciate. So the Madonna story, I think, is incredible. I think she's an amazing person. It's a it's a book that I updated last year for her 60th birthday, and I really love it. I love it very. I think it's just one of my best books. I love her. I think she's incredible.
Yeah, it just sucks radio today. I wish that they would just play. So I'm sure she's working on music. So it's like, why not play her? You know what I mean? It just kills me. All these artists, they're working on music. You know they are. Play their music.
She had an album that came out recently, just like in the last couple of months, you know. And
but they don't play it.
It's you know, what can you say? I mean, it's just the way radio is. You know?
I hate the music business right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's totally changed. It's horrible. But anyway, anybody want to give us a call and talk to Randy? We're having a great time. I am. Are you, Randy?
I am.
How about you, John?
Oh, yes. I wanted to ask Randy, do you enjoy writing more about people in the music industry or actors? Or what's your favorite type of a person that you like to write about?
You know, I've really sort of covered the gamut, you know. I mean, from actors, actresses like Elizabeth Taylor, actors, singers like Frank Sinatra. That was a great project. And then, you know, someone like Michael Jackson and the four books about the Kennedys and the Hiltons. And, you know, for me, it doesn't make any difference what they do for a career, as long as I can connect them to their family. You know, like what is it about that? Their relationship with their family is what really matters to me in my books. And if they've got that kind of strong family unit, like the Jacksons, like the Hiltons, like the Kennedys, like the Bushes, you know, then and even Elizabeth Taylor, you know, she and her mom were very, very close. And my Marilyn Monroe book is primarily about Marilyn Monroe and her mother, Gladys. And, you know, and we did a Lifetime movie based on the Marilyn book called The Secret Life of Marilyn Monroe, in which we had Susan Sarandon playing Marilyn Monroe's mother.
I may have seen that.
It was good. And we also had Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Joe DiMaggio in that in that show.
Yeah, her mother was nuts, right? Their mother was nuts, right?
Well, she had a lot of emotional and mental issues. Yeah, and Susan Sarandon did a great job. And so to answer your question, it's not so much for me what they do for a living as much as how do they interact with their family? And that's what is really key for me. That family dynamic is what most of my books are about.
See, I thought John's question was really good, because I thought you would have swayed toward musicians, because at 14 you had your own band. What was the name of that band?
No, I didn't have a band. Oh my gosh, that's embarrassing. I had like a little singing group with my neighbor.
Oh, the group, yeah.
My neighbor, his name is Dave Emplett. He and I are still friends today. And my sister, my brother, and I were like in this little group, and we used to perform, you know, in our basement, like millions of kids all around the world.
Well, what was the name of it?
Oh, do I got to tell you?
Yes, of course.
The name of the group was The Excels.
Oh, so, okay. It's not so bad.
That's
pretty good.
Actually, now that I think about it, that's pretty good.
Yeah, for 14. So
I can't believe you know about that. I mean,
we love music here. John and I are both musicians, so we love music here. So.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, that's but cool. What do you do? Like the acapella stuff and...
And, you know, lip syncing the records. I mean, it was bunch of kids.
We all did it. Yeah.
Yeah, we all did it. You know, it's. I don't know how you found out about it, because it's definitely not in my Wikipedia. You know, but
we know everything.
Apparently.
I got another question for Michael.
John Randy.
Since you were,
I'm sorry, Randy. I'm thinking about Michael Jackson. With your relationship with Michael Jackson, so you were friends with Michael Jackson. I hear that his family was so dysfunctional, especially the father who just demanded so much from him, and the mother kind of just sat back and didn't do anything. Could you just tell us some more about that? That, you know, the dynamic going on, that since you were kind of close with Michael.
Yeah, well, you know, I always have said that Joseph Jackson, who was Michael's father, and is somebody that I knew pretty much all my life, I always said that Joseph did a lot of the wrong things, but for the right reasons, you know. And I think that, you know, I know that Michael used to complain a lot about being physically abused by Joe when Michael was a little kid. And I think that, you know, when you've been beaten as a child, I think that impacts you, obviously, throughout your entire life, and that everything that you become and everything that you are and everything that you want to be is sort of seen through the prism of being a battered child. And I think that a lot of people didn't really understand that about Michael. And you can't take that out of the equation, you know, when your father hits you when you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. That you can't take that out of the equation when you're trying to assess that person's life as an adult. And so that, you know.
Yeah, but the girls said that, it, you know, they abused him. They abused them, too, you know. The other boys never said much about that. You know, you just said, you know, Joseph was tough, you know.
Well, you know, with the passing of years, you know, the history keeps, well, as Joseph got older, and I think the kids became more sensitive to not wanting to hurt his feelings and bring up old stuff that maybe he was sorry about, you know, that maybe he wished he hadn't done.
Right.
I don't know. My impression of Joseph was that he was not given to a lot of regret. And I think that he probably went to his grave believing he did the best he could. And look, the fact of the matter is
if it wasn't for him, they would have never existed. I mean, you know,
that's what I was just going to say, you know, I mean,
he had to push them, you know.
His goal was to make sure that these kids did not fall into drug abuse and into gangs. Gary, Indiana was a very tough place to grow up. And,
I'm going,
you know,
back to Indiana. That's what I wanted to sing before. Sorry. Indiana, here I come.
That's a great song.
I'm going back to Indiana. Sorry.
That's a great song.
I know, but you said it earlier, which is just wanted to pop out of me. I couldn't help it.
Well, Indiana is a tough place, and, you know, Joseph didn't want his kids to fall into any traps, you know. So I think that, you know, as I said, I think he did a lot of the wrong things, but I guess he did them for the right reasons.
Yeah, well, yeah. And honestly, we don't really know the truth. We weren't there. We don't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do. I mean, you know, this country has become so celebrity-driven over the past, like, 30, 40 years, maybe, let's say 30, 35? What do you think, Randy? Like, our lives revolve around celebrity.
Well, I mean, I think ever since the Internet, I mean, we've always been celebrity-driven, you know, but right. The Internet has made it possible for people to actually interact with celebrities and to actually, you know, sort of impact them, and sometimes not in a good way, you know. Like, I personally, I can tell you that I don't read anything about me on the Internet. Like, I am not that guy who can, you know, read terrible things about himself on the Internet and then just go on with my day. I can't do that. I mean, I read something terrible about myself on the Internet and it ruins me, you know. And I think that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. And I'm not even a celebrity, you know. I'm just a person who writes books.
People can write some nasty shit. I mean, and they're, you know, they think they're these, you know, keyboard warriors, and, you know, they're never going to see you, so they'll say whatever the hell they want. You know,
and they can access you. You know, I mean, anybody can find me. You know, and anybody can find yeah. But I mean, anybody can find, you know, you can find Cher. I mean, you can interact with Cher on Twitter. You can interact with Britney Spears on Instagram.
Right.
You know, you want to pass something on to Diana Ross, you know, tweet her, you know. I mean, it's just like it's a privilege, but I think that it's also something that can be used as a weapon. It can be weaponized.
It's abused. Give us a call, folks, 646-478-0999. Talk to Randy. We're running out of time. I'm sure you have some questions for him. I know I could go on all night. So, you know, John, right? Could I go on all night?
That's right. You certainly can.
I mean, I just enjoy, you know, you write most of your books because, you know, not only you're a fan, so that, you know, and it shows in your writing, you know. It's like here at the show, you know, we're not just the creators and the hosts, but we're fans of all our guests. So it makes it really cool, you know. It makes it so much cooler. And, you know, the fact that, you know, everybody we've ever had on, John, wonderful, right? I mean, come on.
That's right.
You know?
Yes.
And we've remained friends, which is fantastic. So
that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So,
that's,
you know,
cool.
But I wanted to ask you also about, let's see. Well, folks, you can definitely get Randy's books at Amazon for sure. You got to go under, if you don't know, which I highly doubt, J. Randy Tarabarelli. But Randy Tarabarelli would probably come up, right?
Yeah, I sure would, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Which is your favorite Kennedy book that you've written?
You know, I actually think that my favorite Kennedy book of the four that I've written is Jackie, Janet, and Lee, which is not really a Kennedy book because it's mostly about Jackie's side of the family.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, she obviously was married to JFK, so there's a big period of time in her life when it is a Kennedy book. But I loved it so much because it was a story that no one had ever told before.
Yeah.
And to be able to tell a Jackie story that no one had ever told before is such a rare and golden opportunity because she's so much written about over the last, you know, 50 years. I mean, there have been so many books about her. So to be able to tell a story that no one ever heard, which is the story of her relationship with her mother and her sister, was such a great opportunity. And every single day that I wrote that book, I was so happy, you know. I just felt so lucky to be able to be writing that book. And when I look at that book jacket and I take a look at the interior of that book and the photos, it makes me feel like, you know, it's really one of my best and most fulfilling projects.
Excellent. Yeah, I like watching anything that's on about the family as well. Oh, let me ask you. I don't know if you know this, but, like, the niece recently passed. What's going on with that? Carrie was her name, I think, or
Sosha is.
Well, where did I get Carrie? I don't know.
She is a young Kennedy who just overdosed.
It was definitely an overdose, right? Because they didn't talk much about it, you know. Because they've had so much death. It's just horrible, you know. I don't know how they've persevered over the years, especially the way the people have died, you know.
Yeah, it's really tragic, you know. I mean,
everybody calls it the Kennedy curse, you know, but
yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you have to wonder, you know, if there is such a thing. I mean, or is it just because they're such a big family and, you know, and these are the odds. But, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is that addiction sort of is genetically threaded throughout all of the generations of Kennedys.
I
think that they would all agree with me, you know, that this is an issue that they've all had to be careful of. Many of them have dealt with addiction. There have been other overdoses in the family. Ethel's son David died of an overdose. Bobby Kennedy Jr., you know, is a drug addict who's been sober for like 30 years, you know. So, I mean, it can be dealt with, and many of the Kennedys, you know, have dealt with it, and then some have not been able to. And this poor young woman was just one of the casualties of that culture.
Wow, I know. Well, now you were pretty close with Michael, right? Michael Jackson. So, you know, I'm sure you had a lot of good times together, you know, hanging out. But you think deep down he was really, really a sad person? I mean, you really, you know?
Well, I mean, it depends. You know, people always ask me, what was Michael Jackson like? You know, and it's just hard to paint anybody, you know, with such a wide brush stroke. I mean, the better question is, what was Michael Jackson like when he was 14? Or what was Michael Jackson like when he was 23? Or what was Michael Jackson like when he was 30? You know, like none of us are the same person throughout our entire lives.
It's
you know,
true. We change as we go along, right? Nice.
And so, yeah, there were times when Michael was extremely sad, but there were also times when he wasn't. You know, I mean, I think that Michael had an incredible sense of humor that people really still today don't know about.
Right.
And what I always liked about Michael was that he was just such a nice person, and you know that sounds reductive and sort of silly, but the fact of the matter is that nice people are hard to get over, you know, because nice people are kind of rare, you know,
right.
where somebody is just a good person, and. Michael Jackson was just a really good person, and so that's the Michael Jackson that I knew. I don't really think of him as a sad person, but I will say that throughout the time I knew him, there were times when he was incredibly sad.
Right.
That definitely.
Wow. What do you think about Lisa Marie writing a book about their short-lived marriage?
I think it's fair game. You know. I like her very much, and she and Michael, you know, had a good relationship, and
I think she'll be kind. I do.
I do too. You know,
yeah.
On the other hand, Lisa is very frank, and she's a tough woman. I mean, she's tough. I mean, I've had some run-ins with her in my lifetime, and she's tough. You know,
yeah,
so
she takes no shit.
No, she's not going to pull any punches. I mean, if she has anything critical to say about MJ, you know, she's going to say it. But I know that she'll say it with love because of all the women that Michael Jackson had ever been with in his entire lifetime, I think the one who really loved him the most was Lisa Marie Presley.
Oh, wow. That would have been amazing if they had a child, you know? Oh my
God! Yeah,
the king of rock and roll and the king of pop has a child. How crazy is that?
How crazy is that?
God.
Yeah,
that would have been amazing. It really would have. I did want to ask you one more thing about. Oh God, John, help me! I can't think of the question I have for Randy. Oh my God! Well, Randy, we know people could get your books at Amazon.com. Is there a website you want to direct them to, or?
Sure, my website is jrandyterriborelli.com, and we keep at jrandyterriborelli.com. You know, we try to keep all my updated schedules of TV appearances and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, anything coming up?
No, because I just finished three months of television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was incredible. But all of my books are available on Amazon.com, and I have my own page on Amazon.com, and you can check me out there as well. And then I'm on Instagram. I have two Facebook accounts. I'm on Twitter, so you know I'm out there. And if you want to reach out and say hello, you know, please do.
Oh yes, definitely. So, have you ever That's what I wanted to ask. Is speaking of Lisa Marie, have you ever wanted to do a book about Elvis, or do you think there's too many out there to even go there?
No, I love the idea. You know, I've wanted to do it. I mean, what I want to do is the Presley family. I just don't want to do Elvis. I want to do the family.
The family,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my vision is, you know, a book called The Presleys, which would be. His mom and dad and him and Lisa Marie and his wife Priscilla, and you know, so yeah, I mean I have that on my radar one day to do the Presleys.
Wow. And now we went off track in my mind again. I had another question for you. I know there are most of them are unauthorized, but do you have to try and gain permission as much as possible to write about anyone?
Not really, but I will say this: if I have opposition, I'm not going to do it.
Really?
You know, yeah, because it's too hard, and I have to have alignment.
Right.
It doesn't mean I have to have total cooperation, but I have to have alignment.
Right.
And I usually end up getting cooperation anyway during the course of the project, but.
Well, that was my next question, especially for the unauthorized. Who do you go to if you're not going to the actual subject matter?
Well, you know, I try to make sure that I have experience with the actual subject. That's
right.
For sure.
Right.
I've interviewed, you know, dozens of Kennedys over the years. I mean, dozens of, you know. But, you know, there are a lot of people who have experiences with celebrities, you know, who have stories to tell. And anybody who reads my book, you know, will know that I not only tell the stories of the celebrities, but of the people who impacted their lives.
Right.
Yeah, you know, their managers, their lawyers.
Right.
And people who worked for them. In the Kennedy years, we gave a lot of attention to the people who worked at Hickory Hill, which was where Ethel Kennedy raised her 11 children.
Yeah.
And she had a very devoted and loyal staff there who helped her raise those kids. And we interviewed those people. And, you know, they were amazing. I mean, they have great stories to tell. So,
right.
You know, what I love about writing about anybody is that you don't know where the story is going to take you. And a lot of it doesn't have to do with the celebrity who is the subject of your book as much as it has often to do with people sort of satelliting around that person, you know?
Right.
So.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell the folks out there in regard to what's going on or anything like that? Because unfortunately we have a few announcements to make and stuff, and I you know, I don't want to cut you off like the last minute saying we got to run. So,
no, I just like to thank anybody who takes the time to read one of my books, because, you know, it's an effort. I mean, my books, you know, they're 600 pages long, and
wow.
I'm just so honored when anybody, you know, takes the time to read, especially today when we're pulled in so many different directions and
we've got
so many commitments, you know. So I guess what I want to just say is thank you, you know, to anybody who's ever taken the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Randy, go buy a J. Randy
Cavarelli book now.
Randy, are any of your books on audio, an audio format that people can listen to?
Yeah, pretty much all of them are. Yeah, so the audio versions are available on Amazon, or you can download the audio versions of my books on iTunes.
Amazon
Music.
Great.
Yeah. So check out the audios. They're a lot of fun.
And is it you now?
Yes, they are.
Or someone
else? No, it's not. You know, they usually pick actors, you know, they find people, you know, who can bring the subject to life. And
so they do like an acting situation, like the old times on radio?
You know, they usually end up with Broadway actors reading my books. I think they have a dramatic flair in their voice, and they can actually, you know, really pull it off. And I love the audios of my books. I think they're terrific, and I hope people check them out.
I'd have a better time with an audio than reading, because first of all, I can't see shit. And secondly, I listen to more stuff than I do read. So, I'd be walking around, I could listen to my headphones, you know.
Oh yeah, people listen to my books in their cars when they're stuck in traffic, and
right.
Yeah. It's a cool way to go. So
well,
definitely.
Christmas is coming, folks. Pick up a book from J. Randy Terabrioli about your favorite pop culture, or if you want to call it that, celebrities. And oh, my God. I mean, you've written so many books. Like, what, total of 19, 20, 25? What is it?
I think it's 23, but...
Wow.
But I'd have to go back and count. So I don't know.
And it takes like 3 years to write one. So 3 to 20.
Yeah, right. Thanks a lot. I'm in my late 90s.
Yeah, right. Well, Randy, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we're just going to make some announcements. And if you want to hang on and listen, you can. If not, it's been a pleasure. And it's always a pleasure being a friend on Facebook with you. And if you want to come back, if you ever want to come back and talk about a release or anything, we're here.
Okay, thank you so much, and I'll take you up on that. And thank you very much. I really appreciate
you, Randy.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye
now.
I sent you a friend request, Randy. So friend me on Facebook.
John
okay,
Riccio.
Buddy. Take care.
John Riccio.
Will
right,
do.
Take care,
okay.
Randy. Bye bye
now.
Thank you, Mr. Riccio. How are you tonight, sir?
Good.
Hey, Joanne, I wanted to ask you, today's a special day, I think, for everybody, September 11th.
Yes, why I wanted to save some time for that so we could talk about,
I want to know, I know you mentioned it briefly and everything, and you never really told me, and maybe you want to share with everybody where were you in Manhattan at that day and what happened to you that day, because I know you got very sick.
John,
if you want to share.
I'd really not like to go into details about it. It's something I try to forget, but try to remember at the
same
time.
Were you working in
the
towers?
I worked across the street. And
okay.
The problem was, after everything happened, you know, when we finally went back to New York, which was like 2 months later, I believe. I don't know. I was sedated for the first week after, so I honestly don't remember. But I think it was 2 months later when we went back to the office in New York. And, you know, the smell down there was just incredibly horrible. It was basically what I imagined to be a crematorium odor, to be honest. And it was bad. I mean, every day they'd be hosing down the streets of where people worked and everything. And unfortunately, I would watch, don't ask me why, I had no choice. I would see them finding, mostly firefighters, because they would drape the bag or the gurney with a flag. And then they would salute them in a line, and then the ambulance would go by, and taps would play, and the bagpipes would play. And I have unfortunate when I hear those, it brings me back to that. And they always are. So, they touch you anyway. You know, when you hear taps and bagpipes. But I mean, it was a bad experience that day. And a bad experience going forward, and unfortunately a bad experience still to this day for me. Unfortunately, I was affected by the after effects of the air down there, and that's why I'm here, folks. I'm talking on the radio to you because I lost my singing voice due to 9/11. So anyway, that's my take on it. I don't have much to say, John, because I will be, it's been on me all day, so I've been trying not to think about it. So, I dread this day, like so many others, family members who have lost people and, you know, everybody that was there. You know, it's something you'll never forget seeing. It was a horror movie. How about that? We'll put it as a horror movie because, you know, it was an ordinary day. It was a gorgeous day. Oh, my God, I'll never forget it. And it was gorgeous, and it was an ordinary day, and everything changed after that. And I think the world changed after that, too. We had a good couple months where everybody loved each other. And then, like, a year, I'll say maybe 4 or 5 years later, everything just went downhill. Everybody just hates each other now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I kind of left the station I was on before, because we would do topics about, you know, current events. I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't deal with it. It's so depressing out there, you know, what's going on. People are crazy. It's just crazy, you know? They're crazy.
Well, the one good thing about all this music from the past is that it always brought people together, and it still does. So that's why I think a lot of people go backwards and they'll listen to all the old great bands.
Right,
you know,
life was happy and life was good.
Yeah,
you
and
know,
most of them are still touring, so you can still get to see them
absolutely.
Play live.
Oh, God. I Am Butterfly. We had Mike Green on. They're out touring. They did Italy, Belgium. They're doing this right now. Germany.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're over there now. They're doing a major tour over there, which is phenomenal. And I believe Mark Dawson with the Grassroots, they've got a new tour happening too right now. I got to find out that information. They should call us and tell us about it, you know. This way,
who's
going to
be on? Who's going to be on next week, Joanne?
All right,
what do we got
here's
coming
the
up?
Dilly. All right, so Randy we have tonight, and then on Sunday
We have George Bunnell. I'm sorry, I can't see. George Bunnell. He's a bass player from Strawberry Alarm Clock, so that should be pretty cool. And we were supposed to have Susan Jacks on the 18th, but she's booked. So we're going to have this author. They reached out to me today. Unfortunately, her name escapes me. I didn't write it down. I didn't have time to. I rushed in and just jumped on the air with you guys. She is the writer of the movie Bullies, if you remember that. And she has a new movie coming out. And it's called, I don't even want to say it, Nietzsche? I'm not sure. Don't mark my words on that. So, unfortunately, Susan Jacks, her schedule was tied up for tonight. Not tonight, the 18th. And if you guys don't know who she is, which I don't know how you couldn't, but you'll know the song. Which way are you going, Billy? Remember that song?
Yeah, so who's on Sunday night?
Sunday, Mr. Marty Walsh, the guitar extraordinaire from Supertramp, and he's worked with so many other bands. Amazing. So can't wait to have these guys on. So after Marty, I would hope Susan can do the 25th for us, because I believe we'll be off the air the 29th.
Yes, we'll be here. Yeah, I can't do that day, yes.
Right. Well, if you guys don't mind, I was going to try something. I'm not a computer genius or anything like that, but I would like to try and play you a song if you don't mind. John, do you mind if I play a song for you? I don't know how it's going to sound. But,
go right ahead.
I listen to this song once a year. I wrote it, probably September, maybe September 30th of 2011. It was right after the World Trade Center. And, I'm trying to find it. Oh, it's on Facebook. I don't know if I'll be able to find it. I don't know. But I wrote this in honor of all those lost, and basically to help me get through, and it did. It really did. And most people hear it, they get emotional. I don't mean to make you emotional. It just is an experience of how I felt over what I experienced. So if you don't mind, this is called Ordinary Day. I wrote it back in 2001. Right after September 11th. And, John, good luck. Here we go. I'm going to play it and let it play us out. Is that okay?
That sounds good. And everybody, we'll see you on Sunday.
Yeah, we'll see you Sunday with George Bunnell from the Strawberry Alarm Clock Band. And can't wait to do that and promote him. I think Time, right? They did Time, right? Time has come today. Remember that song?
I don't remember that one, no.
I could be wrong. My head is so screwed up today. All right, here we go. Ordinary Day. It's available on iTunes, Apple, if you're interested. All proceeds, I don't get a dime, goes to Safe Horizons. It's a charity to help the kids from September 11th with college and all that stuff. So here we go. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, J. Randy Terravarelli. Loved having you on. And, John, love you. Have a good night. And I will see you on Sunday, honey.
Oh, sounds good. Bye-bye.
No, hold on. Don't hang up, okay?
I'm not hanging up. We're waiting.
All right, here we go. I'm hoping it works. You kidding? You know we have a horrible sound thing here. You know. Let's see what happens. Wish us luck. Uh-oh. Did I get it? What is the issue? Oh, wow. It's not playing. Wait, hold on.
Let me see.
I think I got to hit something. I told you I'm not a computer person. This is ridiculous. It says hit play.
You need somebody to help you there.
Yeah, no.
Let me see if I can get it going. Hold on, let me see if I can get it.
Wait a second,
Joanne. Joanne, hold on. Let me see. I think I can get it. Hold on. Let's see if I can get it. I thought
it would have worked playing it through the phone, you know? Not bad. All right, good night, folks.
God bless all those lost today, their families, firemen, the kids. God bless you. Good night.
Oh, no.